Hello.
Is this thing on?
Oh my God, it's on.
I feel like I used to know you three. Do I sound
okay? Where did you all come from? Hi, folks. Missed you.
What's going on?
Too.
What is this?
You stumbled on a podcast recording.
Oh, cool.
You just like joined a room and we're starting to record now. We talked about cooking things and food. And then other things.
Well, this means I have to use my podcaster voice.
There we go. Just continue that for this whole meeting. Podcast. Oh, man. Podcast. I'm clearly used to Zoom for different reasons now.
Well, we can convert to WebEx if you want, because, you know, I've gotten deeper into using WebEx. No? Okay.
What about Chime?
No.
Actually, I've never used Chime. Is that any good?
Oh. It's if you take every single video chat meeting tool and like jam them together, take all the good bits from all of those and throw them in the trash, what you have left is Chime.
Nice.
Ouch. It's probably accurate, but still, ouch.
Well, this is actually the first time we've gotten together since we've recorded. Like, that's not hyperbole. And a lot of things have changed. Broberg, what's going on with you, buddy? There are a lot of few things have changed for you, haven't there? Give us an update.
I mean, I honestly don't remember the last time we recorded together. I think my daughter was fully baked.
You did have a baby.
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not old, but she is much older. She's 5 months old, which is wild. Yeah. Has so many more tricks now. You know, before it was just like a sentient bobblehead. Now she's like touching toes and reaching for the dog and giggling and bouncing and rolling over. It's pretty.
Has she stolen your glasses yet?
No, she hasn't grabbed my glasses. Not on the regular, at least. I think there was one time where she caught me off guard. She mostly reaches for the dog. She's obsessed with her. It's really cute.
Have you shaved your beard and then seen if she recognizes you yet? That was one of my favorite things to do with my girls, is when they were really young. It freaks them out because they're so used to seeing the beard, and then all of a sudden it's gone. But you still are the same, and they're like, "What?"
So
the problem is he shaved his head one time and it never grew back.
Oh, JJ did. There we go.
That adds up.
I was going to say that works for like anybody though. Like if they're used to seeing you with a beard or a goatee or a mustache or whatever, and then you shave it off. I will say that Landon thought that was really, really funny. And he did it while I was sleeping once. That he's lucky he's still alive after that one.
Yeah, you wake up with a stranger. You're like, who the hell?
Leaning over you, right? Like, leaning over you, you're not really awake yet. Like, what is this?
Not cool. Not cool at all. But yeah, I started a new gig.
Tell us about it.
It's been fun. So I'm director of product management in a division of Target's infrastructure team that focuses on production engineering. So we basically own all the resiliency applications of Target infrastructure, which is a lot of software.
That's a lot.
And when you say resiliency, are you talking about resiliency of the platform or resiliency of like other things like in-store, like electrical power boards? And
great point. No, strictly like the platform engineering side of things. If a app developer pushes software into production, then we want to be providing the tool chain that gives them like a resilient by default experience. So, you know, messing around with a lot of the keywords that we talk about in DevOps and cloud computing from
chaos engineering and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Chaos engineering and some Ollie and some old school monitoring stuff. But just getting into
you got that Nagios running, don't you? You got that Nagios running.
Yeah, Nagios is known to scale, obviously.
So why do you even need your team? Can't you just pay Gremlin and Honeycomb and call it done?
You fully could. That's definitely not Target's way. I don't know how much people have read up on their journey, but they went from fully outsourced to fully insourced around 2015. And they started building everything from scratch themselves. And the pendulum has started to swing a bit to using some open source tools, to buying some software, but we still have a predominantly we build it, we run it, we customize it for our infrastructure kind of approach.
Does that go all the way to the hardware?
I haven't talked to a hardware engineer yet, so I couldn't tell you for sure.
Well, I guess my question was more like data center versus cloud, because I assume that there's some concern about retail competitive behavior of at least one of the clouds.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? It makes sense, right?
We got a mix. I don't know, honestly, how much is public versus private on that just yet. So we do have a lot of, on-prem. I think it's well known that we run our own sort of container software, but there's also some other stuff running. There's a bunch of cloud computing involved, but yeah, there's definitely some.
If I remember correctly, when I was at Chef, it was very obvious Target used OpenStack and Chef, which I always thought was interesting, because they're one of the few that actually did and push things back up. I'm assuming it's different, because if you're still running OpenStack, there's much more conversations we should have, not on recording. But obviously the world's moved towards containers. So, and you said the K word at some point. I swear you did. So,
We all know, yes, the K word. Yeah.
Everyone thinks of that immediately, but I have to say that if it ever comes out that Target is using a certain cloud platform, I'm going to start giggling, just because I think it's entertaining.
IBM Cloud, you mean, right?
What?
IBM Cloud. IBM Cloud.
Well, yes. It's a different IBM three-letter does cloud. One. Sorry, sorry, JJ. Different three-letter one that I'm referring to.
Azure?
Speaking of OpenStack, JJ, I just saw a post from our friend Mark Collier, and apparently they just had the what used to be the OpenStack conference is now the Open Infra conference in Berlin a couple of days ago. So, it's still there. It's still going strong.
And someone's got to run Garrett somewhere.
Right. And I'm sure if you went, you would see many old familiar faces.
Yeah.
So are you saying the OpenStack community is aging?
I mean, I'm saying that the familiar faces to us are aging.
Yeah,
that's true.
No, I always wondered about that. I thought it was a potentially healthy pivot, but I wasn't active in OpenStack ever. So I don't know. Do either of you graying OpenStack users stay involved at all? Or I think you're both pretty moved on to the Kubernetes cloud native community.
By definition, I'm still a PTL, actually, for a project.
What's a PTL?
Wait, really?
Yeah, I actually am.
Really still gonna
project.
I'm still milking it. Still milking it. So in OpenStack,
wait, it has nipples?
Yes, it does. it's more an udder than anything, but that's a different conversation. So in OpenStack Austin, going on 4 or 5 years ago now, maybe six, we created the Sad Panda project, also known as OpenStack Alupua. And we proved that you could create an OpenStack project in less than 15 minutes. Oh, Jesus, 2016? Fuck.
There's our explicit tag.
Yeah, there it is. So we did. And we created a little Docker container that spun up a picture of a sad panda. And we figured out that anyone could be a PTL. There was actually no requirements to become a PTL. And unless you get voted out by the group, you're always a PTL. So we played the we found a what's good a sneaky way to play against the rules,
a loophole.
To get a loophole. Thank you, that's the word. To be able to play this card, and no one's ever questioned us on it. So I have like six PTLs for one project that is one Docker container that's actually still out there. It's just all it does is spin up this little Python web app that has a picture of a sad panda.
You just explained my entire thought of OpenStack and the politics of its organizational structures perfectly in a single story, JJ. Thank you.
Well, I have to say, I do still keep up with OpenStack. I'm not like involved in it, but I keep up with it because, you know, reasons, habit, I don't know, nostalgia, something. I don't know.
At least with the Kubernetes community, if you want to become a PTL or have a project added to the CNCF landscape, you need to show up with $1 million.
$1.5 million. They inflation, supply chain, okay, something like that. Yeah. No.
Wait, I thought nothing. We were having issues with supply chain management with software. Ooh,
nice.
So it's nice.
Okay, all right. What about the rest of you three? It's been a minute since you all, huh?
Yeah.
Wait. Wait. What?
What's going on?
I was gonna say, anyone up to anything new?
I got my hair cut. Yay.
Yay.
It's shorter now, which means I'm on a run streak right now. So today is day 19 of running every day, which is fun.
Nice.
Yeah. So I've been having fun with that, and the shorter hair helps because it's hot in Austin, in case you didn't know, and hot in like a lot of the US, but right now in Austin, like it's been getting up in the hundreds during 100 Fahrenheit or more during the day. So that's been fun. I get up very early to go for a run. Well, yeah, I mean, too. Like basically when I go out, I really should be bringing towels with me or something, but I figure I'm out early enough. No one really gets, no one has to deal with me being extremely sweaty. So, you know, it works out. So, what else of interest? I was making stupid YouTuber faces this morning for YouTube videos. You know, you gotta do that YouTuber face to get the clicks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's true. On YouTube.
You gotta have that like video profile photo with you doing a dumb face pointing at something, and then you draw a white outline around you or something.
Mm-hmm. Or something. Yeah. I don't know. Like the worst part is that it works. Even for tech videos, like it's kind of embarrassing.
Good for you, Laura.
If you actually go look at the channel and like you look at mine versus my colleagues, he didn't start doing the YouTube face until recently, and you can tell the difference of who's been clicking it. And it's embarrassing, but it's funny as anything. So I was making silly YouTube faces this morning. It was great.
Can you show us your silly YouTube face
on this audio medium?
Oh, there it is.
I posted JJ, it up to Twitter.
How about you? Show us your YouTube face.
No. No, actually, all our YouTube videos, Paul, are just you and me, just as our first image of us just talking.
Well,
and I made sure that it's always just you and me. So
no wonder nobody ever clicks on them.
Be surprised.
JJ has 1,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel.
All right.
Oh no, it's 1,300 now. It's grown.
Whew.
And I mean, that's from just random YouTube, you know, stuff of me and Paul, for lack of a term, fucking around on computers. Turns out people like it. And
that's also the category on Pornhub that we're in as well.
Look at those. Yeah, you should look at that one. That one's good. Yeah. So you miss us, Laura. You know you did.
I did miss y'all. I miss y'all so much. What have y'all been up to? When do you go?
Paul, go.
Paul, yeah. Paul, where are you in the world today?
That is a really good question. So I will say I'm currently homeless, and that doesn't mean that I'm poor and destitute. It just literally, I don't have an official, official permanent residence, but I don't live there. It's for mail and proof of residence and stuff. I don't stay there. So I've been bouncing around. I've spent some time in Chicago. I went over to Spain for a few weeks. So KubeCon was in Spain, and then I stuck around an extra week and a half or so. And then right as I was coming home, a friend of ours, Boyd, was like, hey, you should come to Colorado and stay with me because he's got a place in Colorado. Good so choice. I did that.
Good choice.
And then so I just got back into Chicago a few days ago. I'm kind of using Chicago as my home base because it's a bit more central than Austin was. And so it's a bit easier to get to places. For example, I can drive to Matt Broberg in a day. And I did so over Easter, which was fun. I got to meet a baby.
I want to know about that food.
That was so fun. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. And I'm sort of visiting the Midwest and exploring and enjoying things. So here's the thing I've learned about travel is it's one of the main reasons it's expensive is because while you're traveling, you're also paying for everything back home. So if you don't have a back home to be paying for, travel suddenly gets a lot cheaper. Like, let's say you're paying rent or a mortgage, doesn't matter which, it's probably $3,000 a month, give or take, plus utilities, plus whatever, plus whatever. I mean, you can stay at a hotel, a reasonable hotel for $100 a month, $100 a day in most places.
I was going to say, wow, where'd you find one for $100 a month?
Yeah, no, a day. Man. Like, you know, so you've got hotels, you've got Airbnb, Vrbo, you've got all that sort of stuff. So if you're willing to pay a slight premium for some of it, but you're not paying rent, you're not paying internet, you're not paying for all this other stuff, it's actually not that expensive. As long as you have the privilege that comes with remote work and all that other stuff, of course.
So how long is it going to be before you have a van, like a camper van? And how quickly am I allowed to turbocharge it? What if I turbocharge it? Am I allowed?
Well, Laura, I think the correct answer was I'll get one of those Volkswagen Vanagons and stick a Subaru engine in it. And that way we can turbo the shit out of it.
Perfect. I was going down
the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was imagining him driving the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles van.
Well, speaking of that,
it has to be a Subaru. Like, we already know this. Right. There has to be Subaru in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Because awesome.
So the good thing about the Volkswagens is their gearboxes share a pedigree with Porsche. And so you can put a lot more horsepower behind, in front of it, and it still copes just fine. And so that is a pretty common thing to put a 2.0, 2.2, 2.5 turbo Subaru engine in the back of one of those things.
See, I think this is your next iteration, Paul, is the van dweller that drives around the US and explores.
I have thought about it, but I can fit a lot of stuff in my Outback, and it can also support a rooftop tent if I wanted to. So, you know,
I have one if you want it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm still deciding if I want to do rooftop tent or just carry a tent, but mostly stay in like buildings.
Rooftop tents are nice. I really enjoyed ours. My car no longer has the rails to be able to do it. So, and it's much bigger. So we're able to sleep inside if we really want to, and it can tow like an actual camper.
But you can't put a rooftop tent on the Datsun?
No, not on the Z. No. Well, so someone thinks it's a great idea. He very much wants to put stuff on the roof. And I'm like, no, it's going to look ridiculous. Haven't you ever seen like the 911s driving around with the rooftop tent? They look ridiculous. They look stupid. That's me. I mean, you have these gorgeous clean lines and you're going to put a rooftop tent on it.
It's like that house car that was driving around Austin or whatever.
Oh, the house car was so weird.
That was so weird. That is very weird. Yeah. But tell us, Paul, I have one question for Paul.
JJ, you brought it up. So you have to explain.
Oh, I will, but I'll do have one, but I have one question for Paul. How do you pronounce Chicago? Because you said it three different ways on this podcast already. And I'm curious, wow, now that you live there, which way are you supposed to say it?
Chicago? Uh-oh. How have I pronounced it?
You said Chicago. You said Chicago. And you said Chicago. There's the third one I couldn't do otherwise, but you did it three different ways. No?
It's Chicago.
There you go. There's you said that
Chicago.
One.
Chicago.
Yeah.
I think I say that sometimes just trying to be funny.
No. Okay. I don't know. You're a Chicagoan. You're a Chicagoan now. So
I mean, I don't know. I'm staying here. I don't know. I live here. So I live in Texas for if you're talking to me from the IRS for sure.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. That's true. You're still in Austin at heart.
I still have a permanent address in Austin.
In mine.
And that is where I live. And I'll have to visit at some point in the next couple of months to renew my driver's license, because as a filthy immigrant, I can't renew my driver's license online because Texas likes to punish people for being immigrants.
Because Texas is weird, as someone who lives here.
Yep. Yeah. I also have a nearly 18-month expired green card at this point because a certain ex-president destroyed the Department of Immigration's ability to process things. And so that's fun. In a few days, I have to apply for a second extension because they're so far behind. And of course, I can only apply for the extension within 60 days of it actually expiring for the second time. And then it takes 60 to 90 days to process getting the extension. So
great.
Fun.
How that goes.
That sucks, dude. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, you know, worst case, they kick me out of the country and I go back to Australia. So, you know, it's not all bad.
We can still talk. We have Zoom or Chime or something. Chime.
WebEx. We're going to WebEx. Can I do it? No? Okay.
I'm surprised, JJ, IBM doesn't have its own video conferencing solution at this point.
It's WebEx. It's WebEx.
Yeah, but they don't own that. They didn't make that.
Didn't Cisco buy that?
Yeah, it's Cisco.
It's a Cisco.
It's funny. There's a lot of conversation internally about it, but the TLDR of it all is some mucky muck executive was trying to get Cisco hardware inside some of our data centers. And they're like, hey, you need to use WebEx. And some mucky muck executive was like, will you give it to us for a discounted if we get this hardware from you? And they're like, yeah, okay. And guess what? There's our standard.
So that's how corporate works.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So
I just realized, am I the only one who's working in a startup? I am, of the four of us.
Okay. I guess you are.
I am. Huh.
Does this haunt you? Like, I can't read your.
Well, no, like, it's kind of. I just had this moment of, like, wait a minute. Oh, right. Okay. I guess that's true. You know, I forget, like, corporate world in some ways because it's been now. When was the last time I was at Rackspace?
4 years? 4 or 5? 5 years. 5 years.
3 years. Right? 4 years. 3 years. I don't know. Time has no meaning. But it's been long enough that now I'm starting to be like, I don't know how processes work anymore sometimes. Like, you don't just do it and then find out later that you weren't supposed to. Oops. Okay.
No, you still do that. You definitely still do that. And you're less likely to be fired over it in enterprise because it's harder to fire people.
True. That is true. There's that true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the most fun thing about this job right now is like when I was doing the onboarding, it wasn't like, hey, we build software to, you know, save the world. Like every one of the tech companies I've worked for tries to convince itself. It's like, we have a bunch of stores that serve like millions of people all the time. That's what we do. Like the software is in service of something specific and tangible and real in that way. And it's been really nice to just see that right away, as opposed to have to, you know, I don't know, abstract and imagine how it connects.
Do you occasionally go to like a Target store to just walk around and kind of ground yourself before your next meeting?
No.
he goes and looks at the POSs and be like, huh, yeah. I think we could change that icon.
I could see if that's,
I could fix that.
Well, here's actually an important question for you, Matt. Do you get a staff discount and can I use it to buy some camping equipment?
Did you get the little label to like the little, what is it called? Pin?
A badge.
Also a badge.
Name
yes.
Tag? Oh, like a, you're name saying tag. Like my yeah. name tag? No, yeah. I unfortunately did not get a name tag. I do have a Target badge the way all team members have Target badges.
Yeah.
I got a name tag.
Yeah, you do. That's ridiculous.
It's magnetic.
Oh my God. It looks like you work at a gas station.
Hey, if it's magnetic, does that mean now that you've had several COVID vaccines, it'll just stick to you?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, it's not sticking to the injection site.
Oh, no. Maybe it's not effective anymore.
I don't have enough COVID vaccine. I need another chip.
She might have got a placebo. Who's to say? Yeah, I do get the discount. And no, you can't use it. Or at least I can't say on any public medium that anyone will ever use it. But it is substantial.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah. But that I also like nice camping. Perk.
So really, you went to work at Target so that you can afford diapers.
That's primarily it.
Yeah. There we go.
Yep, diapers and diapers.
This is fair.
Well, what
have you gotten your diaper genie yet? Wait. Have you gotten your diaper genie yet?
I don't want
to. We talked about this.
I know.
Come on.
I figured out how to use my silly one. It ended up being pretty obvious. Like, put any size garbage bag in it and lit around the outside.
Robert.
Wait, like a trash can?
It's basically,
you
know,
you put it around the outside and suddenly it works.
Yeah. Okay. It's a trash can with a specialized chute. So when you, it's like got a little, one of the little doors on top, that's just about, you know, a fully saturated diaper width, if you will. And you plop it in there like a little, you know, deposit to a god. And once a week you finish praying to it and you empty it. And yes,
you've gotten a lot of practice, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of pee and poop. She somehow blew out into her left leg and all of the poop. There's no poop in the diaper, but it was down her entire left leg. And I took her onesie off and it was like, I don't know if you ever like filled up a sock with water or something, but it was basically like that. Like, it was substantial amounts of poop. And her poop transition as she's getting older, it doesn't smell like, haha, you're a kid, that's really cute. It smells like adult poop now, for the most part, already. It's
wow.
Yep. And a human definitely shit in those pants, and I had to clean them.
So at that point, isn't it easier just to throw the baby away and try for a new one? Like, cleaning it sounds like hard work.
I thought you were gonna say the onesie fall, but yeah, the baby's surprisingly versatile. You can wipe that up and she's good. She's reusable.
Can you throw the washing machine on like gentle cycle?
Yeah, gentle cycle. As long as it's gentle cycle, it's pediatrician approved.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, low tumble, low heat.
Well, I think that's actually good. It teaches them gymnastics if you put them in a tumble dryer.
You knew you missed us. Come on. You need a perspective that you don't get when you're not on this podcast.
I know. I forgot we transitioned to parenting tips. It's really terrifying.
I mean, I don't have kids, so I'm not going to try to give you any. I can give you information about like dog stuff, but like dealing with dog poo and stuff like that. But I don't know if that's going to help you. I mean, I can tell you the best dog bags for dealing with doggy duty, but and like the best techniques and stuff, but I can't tell you anything about the best duties for baby diapers.
You know, sorry, dude. That's, I still value what you can bring.
I appreciate
to the table.
That.
Thank you.
Okay.
So damn it, I want to talk about food.
Let's talk about food.
Round robin. What's something you've
cooked? Well, no, wait. I need to know. So the two of you got together and I just saw pictures like of grilling amazingness. And I need to know what that food was like. You need.
Well, it's basically Paul here and my wife finally met him, which was cool. But then.
Excuse me. I had met your wife before.
Just kidding. They had already met, but
well, the baby hasn't met him before, so the baby met him. So that's fine.
But she's not making memories. Like, she'll have to meet him again.
Just like your wife isn't making memories, or at least not of me, apparently.
No, I'm not making memories of the times you guys hung out. Damn it. Anyway, we just cooked the whole weekend. It was awesome. Just in the kitchen constantly. don't know, Paul, where do you want to start?
I don't know. I guess we did. So we did Seder, right? So we did
sort of do Seder. Yeah.
We did a Seder-ish. We did start the day off with bacon, which kind of did not necessarily make for a super traditional Seder.
It wasn't a kosher Seder. Yeah, that's fine.
But the dinner, I think we managed to keep kosher, right?
Yeah. The main course were two slow-smoked lamb shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
With what was it stuffed with? Rosemary and garlic?
Rosemary, garlic, and lemon zest.
And you made a chimichurri that you also smothered it with, and we had a bunch left over for topping it. So it was used in the smoker. You all got us, got me. And it was delicious. That was absolutely amazing. Plus, Paul led in making homemade matzo ball soup. I had the homemade stock on hand, but he was like crunching up the matzah and I don't know, just being a mad scientist. I didn't know about like adding carbonation to it to help it bind.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. Didn't quite understand that.
Well, it just helps it like puff up and get a bit aerated because, you know, the bubbles in the soda water get caught in the gluten network. Well, not gluten network, but the egg and the matzah. And so it helps keep it fluffy and airy.
Yeah.
Because the alternative is you use a leavening agent, which is or is not allowed, depending on who you ask. Because there were some people that were saying baking powder or baking soda is okay, and other people saying it wasn't. So
yeah. Yeah.
I was about to ask about the gluten network and what the latency was, but never mind. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. Back to food. Please tell us more about the food.
Yeah.
And then we did some stuff with beets. We did a bunch of stuff, but we also did a really nice dinner where we did fish, surf and turf, right? So you did your, was it fancy Scandinavian lake trout?
Yeah. It's the, what do they call it? It's the Scandinavian.
It's not lutefisk.
No, we didn't do any like actual smoked trout. It was, it was a fresh fillet of this kind of fatty. It looks just like, that's not edible. It looks like fatty salmon. It was, it's called like a fjord trout. And I do like a indirect heat, like with salt and sugar brine, dry brine on it, and it's just really buttery and delicious.
I may need said recipe.
Oh sure, please. Yeah, and then Paul charred up some ribeye. I think it was
a bone-in ribeye, not quite a tomahawk, but a big thick bone-in ribeye.
Real good.
And chimichurri.
It's a chimichurri inspired weekend.
Yeah.
I need a recipe for chimichurri. Like I've been trying to make it, and I guess the two times I have made it since we've talked, not very good.
I love it when you're honest with yourself like that.
It's pretty straightforward. Actually, there's a guy on YouTube. My name is Andong. You've probably seen some of his videos before. And he literally just today or yesterday released a video that does chimichurri pico de gallo, which you probably know that for sure. And then like a pickle relish, like cucumber pickle relish. Ooh, kind of. It was like a trio of chunky sauces or something was the title for the video. And it's a pretty solid chimichurri recipe. It's pretty simple. So I would give that a watch and make it that way and see how you go. The only thing I do differently is I tend to add a bit more oil. So it's really swimming because I like flavoring the oil up and stuff. But, you know, personal preferences, etc.
Cool. I shall.
Aside from that, I haven't been doing a ton of cooking because of travel, but I am keeping my sourdough starter alive and baking something when I can, when I have access to an oven. I've got my little indoor yakitori grill, so I can do yakitori and some other stuff on that. It's been kind of fun.
Cool. Well, I had shakshuka.
Shakshuka. I love shakshuka.
Shakshuka is so good. So,
Shakira? It's really funny. My cousins, my Israeli cousins, randomly called me out of the blue, like, I don't know, it's maybe 9 months now ago, and said, "Hey, we're moving to Austin. You live near there, right? Like, I'd like to catch up with you once." I'm like, okay. It turns out they now live like within 15 minutes of us. So, which is really funny. But my cousin is like, his favorite thing to make is shakshuka. He makes it like, he apparently used to make it in college all the time. Like, he is known for this. So he made it for us for the first time, 'cause I've never actually had it. So we had that and, homemade hummus, like from scratch hummus and pitas. And it was delicious. And of course in my family, like, garlic is the thing. So like, it's really funny considering that we didn't really grow up together or anything, but his side of the family always puts a ton of garlic in. I've always put a ton of garlic in, and it was just like, oh, he's like, "Are you okay with garlic?" I'm like, "This is my favorite thing." And he's like, "Yeah, perfect." And then his wife was like, "Hey, maybe not so much. The rest of us might not like it as much as you two do." So I got really excited, and I went and pulled out a old eggs in purgatory recipe, which is like the Italian version. And I made that here at home, and I was very excited. So if you have tips on shakshuka or eggs in purgatory, I will happily take them, because I forgot how much I liked eggs in purgatory. And now I really want to learn how to make shakshuka. So
yeah, I'm a big fan. And I think they're basically the same, right?
Basically, yeah. It's different spices. And right. I think now he did it much more from scratch than I did. So he also did better. Like, his was in a cast iron. I did it in our stainless steel, and there definitely was a difference. Also, mine was in a gigantic, like, 12-inch skillet. I think his was more like a 10 or an 8. So it was much creamier in his, but also so there's a lot more cheese in eggs in purgatory.
Yeah, that's wrong.
You definitely want a lot of cheese.
It's delicious though.
No.
Sorry, you can say no.
Not shakshuka.
No. I'm saying eggs in purgatory. This weekend. Eggs in purgatory has a lot of cheese in it.
I've never even heard of this. It just seems
So eggs in purgatory is like the Italian version. So it's, you take like crushed tomatoes, or you crush them yourself, and you put it in, just let them simmer for a long time. Put a ton of garlic in. I typically put rosemary and basil in there. And you let it go and go and go and go and go. And then as it's getting nice and like really thick, sometimes you put butter in there then. And so I put butter in there. Occasionally I'll put the Parmesan in then, and then I'll crack the eggs into the wells and cook, let them do until they're soft, soft boiled. I don't know. I'm never good at like the names of eggs. I just know what they look like.
Yeah. It's basically yolks
are runny, but the whites are cooked. And then you scoop it out and you eat it. But you put more Parmesan cheese on top of it. Like lots and lots and lots of Parmesan.
Spread it on bread or something? Like, what do you?
Yeah, so you can get it on bread. The Italian stuff we always got, or I always did it with some nice crusty Italian bread, specifically garlic bread. Because again, garlic.
Garlic.
So here's a quick tip for when you do the bread for it. And you may know this already, but you toast the bread, and when it's still hot, you rub it with a garlic clove.
Yeah.
And because the bread is kind of hard, it almost acts like a grater on the garlic. So you're kind of just grating the garlic over the hot toast, and it's super good.
Yes.
And one thing I wanted to say is, you mentioned they used a cast iron pan. So you do want to be careful using cast iron for tomato-based things, because they're so acidic. And if your pan isn't super well seasoned, you can strip seasoning off, which isn't a big deal, but it is something to think about.
Yeah. I mean, my cousin cooks in that all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure theirs was extremely well seasoned, but I wanted to bring it up because I had never had shakshuka, and it was amazing. And having it with the homemade hummus as well. And I got to learn how to make homemade hummus and everything. And it was delicious. And I'm like,
oh, homemade hummus. Now we're talking.
Yeah, no, it was homemade hummus. So with fresh chickpeas. So he had already started by the time I got there, but so they had already process the chickpeas and they put in tahini that they had. And I think it might have been homemade tahini, actually. And then, of course, a ridiculous amount of garlic, because the both of us were like, garlic, in it goes. And then kept blending that in a food processor until it was nice and creamy. And then we started squeezing lemons into it until he said, yeah, that's about right. That's about right. We just kept tasting it. And then when we popped it open, his daughter came over and just like came and just filled an entire bowl. And she's like, I'll take this. And walked off and we're like, maybe we should wait for lunch. Come back. It was very good. And then that's apparently really the way to eat it is really to like mix the shakshuka with the homemade hummus while you're eating it. And I was like, wow, this is really good. I'm a little obsessed with it. It's been a few weeks now since we had it.
Nice.
Yeah, I learned shakshuka from an older Jewish friend and who said, like, when you go to Israel, be sure to order it. And I ate it every morning in Israel with a bunch of hummus. So and I'm pretty, I'm into it. I haven't cooked it in a long time, but I had a really fun recipe. I would definitely not make it kosher and add sausage in as well, which was really nice.
Mm.
If you have it, or like you can do some sort of non-pig meat, but I find like getting some meat like fat into it is really nice as well. I made it spicy once. So I made like a chili oil in there. It was really, really tasty. But it's been a minute. I'm really glad you brought that up, Laura.
All right, Matt, here's your next, here's your next fusion dish. Are you ready for it? Shakshuka mapo.
I already had that in my head the minute you said that. I'm like, you had me at fusion. That sounds absolutely terrible.
Absolutely terrible, and yet it's going to happen in your kitchen soon. Is that what you're telling us?
And I will eat it very alone, because I don't think I have anyone near me that would touch that. It sounds fun though. No, I mean,
speaking of mapo, just real quick, Kenji Lopez just did a recipe and he made a like super low spicy one. So for folks that love mapo but have to deal with friends and family that don't like spice, that you should look it up. And it's basically a take on the Japanese variant, which doesn't have the Szechuan peppercorns at all. And then he also massively reduced the amount of like chili type stuff that goes in. Because then, of course, you can add chili oil to your own bowl and spice it up again.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm going to go from disappointing my wife to maybe convincing her she could like mapo tofu with that recipe. Mm-hmm. Also, if it's Kenji, it's bound to be fantastic. I did just get his new cookbook.
The workbook?
Yeah, as an early Father's Day present. I haven't nice. Cracked it yet, but it's a book on how to cook effectively in a wok. And you know, the guy is just so fun to follow. He is such great advice. So it'll be fun. I haven't dug through it yet. And it's a little too warm for wok cooking for me. I'm doing mostly grilling life. Like I'm not sure if you all saw, but I made some really fun ribs. That. Yeah. It was three racks of Peterson's pork ribs. So Peterson's is a farm like right over the border in Wisconsin, and did one in like a Carolina mustard sauce, another in kind of like a Memphis style barbecue sauce, and the third one with just like hardcore carnivore spices on it. And I had way too many ribs for way too long, but It was pretty great. The recipe I followed started at 185. And for the first, you know, 3 hours or so, and then you ramp it up to 225. And then when it gets to the temperature you're looking for, you wrap it then. And the texture was really perfect. Like it wasn't fall off the bone, but like a single bite, you could pull it off cleanly. And it was exactly what we were going for. So super tasty. JJ, what have you been cooking?
Yeah. So I've had some culinary adventures since we spoke. For the first time, I actually grilled shrimp. Believe it or not, we do not have a lot of shrimp. Well, my wife doesn't like shrimp at all. So, but it turns out my mother-in-law absolutely adores it. So I made my own kind of spice concoction with Szechuan peppers, actually, actual Szechuan peppers now. I grilled or toasted them because I originally tried to just pull them directly from the thing and break them up in a mortar and pestle, and learned very quickly that is not how you do it because it turns into like a green mush. So I toasted it, and then I broke it up into basically pepper, and then Szechuan pepper, and then I put a couple other things, I forget what it was, and then put it on the shrimp, and then grilled them on my grill. And my mother-in-law was very, very happy. So that's always a good thing. And I asked her, so can you taste your tongue? And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, I guess you don't have the gene. Because I couldn't feel my tongue. Which
there is no gene. Like everyone feels Szechuan peppercorns. So there's a, just punched my microphone. There's a America's native plant called a prickly ash, which is related to or similar enough to Szechuan peppercorn that they also have the same effect. And they actually, in Mexico, you can buy sticks of it and you like put the stick in your, like a little branch kind of thing, in like a chili or a soup or whatever, and you sort of give a little bit of background of that same tingly sensation.
Mm. You need to get that name from you. I need to find that because I think that's something I could get to expose my family more to. Yeah, so that was good. Then I've been delving down the milk Japanese milk bread with tangzhoun. Which has now become my standard bread that I make, which is nice. It's very fluffy and it's a very versatile bread too, which is the best part. You can turn it into hamburger buns, a loaf. If it sticks around a little too long, making French bread out of it is great. It's a completely opposite from what I was doing with my overnight bread, which is nice because my whole goal originally of learning how to make bread was in HEB here in Texas. They have this French loaf that they make that's standard, that's like $2, like, or maybe $3 or inflation, who knows now. But that was what I wanted to learn how to make, right? Like, I was like, why am I buying this fucking thing all the time? I need to learn to make this at home. And Japanese milk bread is really close to that. So I'm very, very excited that I'm finally getting to the original goal of me learning how to make bread, which was just a very simple 3-hour recipe, but whatever. Just went a very long path to get there. What else? I do have a question about cast iron. We were talking about it earlier, where so my cast iron is pretty well seasoned now. I use it for pretty much everything. But I've noticed that when I fry something inside of it and there's oil that's left over inside of it after I've cleaned it out and all, there is a layer of shininess on it because of the oil being left behind. It disappears after the fact. But is that actually seasoning it more? Or like, should I take that seasoning off, or should I take that oil that's been left off, like really get rid of it? Or like, am I just more seasoning my pan? Do you see what I'm saying? Like this.
All right, so yes. Yeah. So anytime you cook with oil, you're basically like reinforcing the seasoning, right? Even if you're deep frying or whatever. But it's not as intense when you do the like intentional seasoning, when you put a very thin layer of oil, take it up to like 450, whatever, get it really ingrained.
Yeah.
It is actually a good idea to keep a protective layer of oil over it anyway. So you don't have to be super worried about like getting all of that oil off. Obviously, you don't want to leave it for a few months if it's an oil that goes rancid, but it's totally fine to just kind of leave a thin layer of oil. And then next time you use it, I mean, every time you use cast iron, right? You give it a quick wipe out because, yep. you know, anyway. So
I also do the salt thing on there too sometimes to get rid of all the extra food that's been stuck behind.
Oh, when you're cleaning it, yeah. But you would do that after you've used it, not after you've let it sit for months, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I use my cast iron almost daily. So
yeah.
I made homemade donuts.
Cool.
As a type 1 diabetic, I make a lot of sugary things, which is weird, but you know, I can't have it, but I like to make it. So, that was one of the reasons why, it spurred my memory thinking about the cast iron, because that's what happened after the fact. But those, homemade donuts, there's a picture on Twitter. If you follow me, it's on there. Making the glaze was easy, but getting the things to stick on the glaze was a good word for it. Not a challenge, but it was a timing issue because of how hot the donut is and how it creates the crust with the glaze. To get like sprinkles and shit to actually stick on it was a really interesting, like I had to have like a pipeline of making a donut to like, it only lasted like 2 minutes in the frying oil, immediately pull it out. Okay, immediately put it in the glaze and now put the sprinkles on it. But if you miss it, it coagulates is a good word for it. And then now it just becomes a glazed donut. And you're like, but I wanted chocolate on it. And this now sucks.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second. So I think this glazing, which is like that super thin, like sugary coating on a donut. And then there's more like if you do a chocolate and sprinkles donut where it's like a thicker type, maybe fudgier kind of thing. It's more of an icing than a glaze.
Oh.
So I think if you wanted to glaze and put sprinkles on, you totally like, you would even like dip it in the glaze and then dip it directly into a bowl of sprinkles.
Mm.
Or you would have like a thicker icing and you would dip it in the icing and then dip it in the sprinkles.
That was my problem.
That's how I think I would approach that.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. That's me in a nutshell.
Nice.
Or
so speaking of, and are you sure it wasn't a bagel or a coffee?
It wasn't. Good question. It was a mug.
All right. Inside joke. And best inside jokes aren't explained. So the other thing I did when I was at Boyd's, he didn't have a grill and we were cooking indoors and he didn't have a very good vent hood, right? And so his air quality meter would go off. And I'm like, this is a problem I can solve. So I went to the local Walmart and bought him a Blackstone griddle. And it was the two burner one. Okay. So it's not too big. And it comes with a little stand and it was really, really good. So Blackstone griddles are the flat top. I seasoned it, which you season just like cast iron. So you'll know the process there. I made smash burgers. We made a bunch of breakfasts. So like, you know, hash browns and sausage and bacon. And also, it was fantastic. And I think the flat top griddle is an underutilized part of the grill universe and super useful and not particularly expensive. So if you're looking for something a little extra for your grilling repertoire, I highly recommend a Blackstone or something similar. And they also have an electric version, which I haven't tried, but I'm actually interested in testing out that you can use indoor or outdoor.
How does a flat top do crust on steak? Yeah.
It's just like doing it would be like doing it in a cast iron pan.
Hmm. Interesting.
So something just went very wrong with my Zoom and everyone's faces crashed.
Well, I mean, we can see you, but your camera just suddenly went. Right.
Yep.
So
yeah, the video card in this laptop crashes its 3D accelerator every once in a while and causes havoc with this kind of thing. But as long as you can hear me, that's all that matters.
It decelerates, not accelerates.
You got it. Good job.
Yeah, there we go. Good
joke. There's a JJ joke that's almost actually funny. So the other thing, Blackstone griddle, because it's like a flat top and it gets nice and hot, you can actually do a lot of things you would do in a wok in it. So like fried rice and stuff like that is, you know, a lot of fun to make with it. Think of your Japanese teppanyaki steakhouse, right? They're basically using that format grill to cook stuff. So it works really well. And JJ, for the steak, if you use, and you can just cook a steak on it just fine. It's great. If you've got like a two burner or more one, you can obviously do like a hot zone and a cool zone. So you can kind of do a reverse sear. But you can also use like a weight on it. So you get like a cast iron heavy weight and you stick that on it. And that makes sure there's maximum surface area steak to cooking surface.
You've intrigued me, my friend. You've intrigued me.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you can get a griddle top for your grill. Some of them will go over the grates. Some of them replace the grates. But I don't know. I find sometimes because the actual burners aren't designed to do a big flat griddle, you don't necessarily get it as hot as you want. But it is also worth trying. I think Mizen or one of those new wave pan companies has actually just released a griddle specifically for doing things like smash burgers and stuff. So it might be worth checking out.
Ooh, I saw a grilling hack that I can't believe you never told me, or I guess you don't use gas very often, Paul, but a person and got a new grill and he's like, time to make the toast. And he put, you know, slices of bread all over the top of the grill, turned it on, and then after a little bit, flipped them all over to see like where does the heat actually get distributed on the grill top.
You're talking about like the hood of the grill, or are you talking about actually on the grate?
On the grate.
Yeah. You're talking about. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it basically showed him where the hotter spots are going to be, where the colder spots are going to be, all along the grill. And I'd never even thought about that. So it's kind of neat. I could see that even being helpful on a charcoal one. Like if you're setting it up and not sure exactly where your heat lines are going to be.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually good to learn your smoker as well. So something like a stick burner that, you know, pushes the heat through, it's super useful to know where the hot parts of that is. But even like your Traeger, you'd probably find that there's, you know, the section closer to the to where it's burning the little chips is probably going to be 30-40 degrees hotter than the rest, and so you can kind of do it there too.
Cool. Yeah, the more you know.
All right, folks. Cool. What are you cooking this weekend? We are just about done, so
I see this eggs in purgatory thing. I feel like I'm going to be attempting to do, because I do have a fuck ton of tomatoes that I didn't even get into that story about, that I need to use. So this is a prime opportunity for me to take advantage of.
Absolutely. Go for it. It's also a good way to use up leftover red sauce. Any kind of Italian pasta sauce with a bunch of tomatoes in it, meat or not, actually works really well as a base for eggs and purgatory or similar.
I'm going to steal that one. That sounds great. And I was thinking of like what I wanted to make for brunch this weekend. And yeah, why not shakshuka it up?
Yeah. You know, I'm gonna go with that too. I'm gonna make a shakshuka or a similar this weekend. You know, it'd be really good. Maybe do like a Mexican take on it and use like cook down some chorizo first and then add the tomatoes.
Yes. Maybe some black beans. Oh yeah, black beans. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about you, Laura?
I don't know what I'm cooking this weekend. It's not likely to be eggs in purgatory or shakshuka. I'm sorry. I'm going to break the trend here. It's our anniversary this weekend. So
congratulations.
We're probably going to be going out. Thank you. We're probably just going to be going out and exploring Austin in a way, you know, kind of being tourists in our own town a little bit. So
nice.
I might let other people cook for me. That might be nice.
I hear the Alamo Draft House is a good place to go.
Okay. No. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That can't be true. Yeah. But I'm sure you'll find something delicious.
Oh, the Chili's on North Lamar has really good burgers.
45th and Lamar. I've heard that.
Frosty Marks. Yep. Can't go wrong.
Well, I will say one of our favorite places is actually the Crepe Place on 2nd and I forget the cross street. Mm-hmm. It's very good. So if you
where did that meme about Chili's on Lamar and 45th come from? Is that Reddit? Like, that's a very Austin thing, right?
It came from Reddit. It's an Austin Reddit thing.
Okay.
R. Austin started almost 10, 15 years ago. Like it's, yeah, it, and so, that's not hyperbole. It's been a very, very long time.
It is still tradition, and there still is a Chili's at 45th and Lamar.
Yeah. All right.
And everyone will.
On that note, I'll see you all next week, hopefully.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. And recording.